imagination and community. Over the years, I've collected so many books that, in aggregate, they can fairly be called a library. I don't know what percentage of them I have read. Increasingly, I wonder how many of them I ever will read. This has done nothing to dampen my pleasure in acquiring more books. But it has caused me to ponder the meaning they have for me and the fact that to me they epitomize one great aspect of the goodness of life. Recently I bought a book titled On What Cannot Be Said, Apophatic Discourses in Philosophy, Religion, Literature, and the Arts, Volume 1, Classic Formulations. The title itself is worth far more than the price of the book. And then there is the table of contents. So far I have read only the last and latest selection from The Wandering Cherub by Silesius Angelus, who wrote in the 17th century. In the stack of magazines, read and unread, that I can never bring myself to throw away, there are any number of articles suggesting that science, too, explores the apophatic, reality that eludes words. Dark matter, dark energy, the unexpressed dimensions proposed by string theory, the imponderable strangeness described by quantum theory. These magazine essays might be titled Learned Ignorance or The Cloud of Unknowing, or they might at least stand beside Plato's and Plotinus's demonstrations of the failures of language, which are, paradoxically, demonstrations of the extraordinary power of language to evoke a reality beyond its grasp, to evoke a sense of what cannot be said. I love all this for a number of reasons, one of them being that, as a writer, I continuously attempt to make inroads on the vast terrain of what cannot be said, or said by me, at least. I seem to know by intuition a great deal that I cannot find words for, and to enlarge the field of my intuition every time I fail again to find these words. That is to say, the unnamed is overwhelmingly present and real for me, and this is truer because the moment it stops being a standard for what I do is the moment my language goes slack and my imagination disengages itself. I would almost say it is the moment in which my language becomes false. The frontiers of the unsayable and the avenues of approach to those frontiers have been opened for me by every book I have ever read that was in any degree ambitious, earnest, or imaginative. By every good teacher I have had, by music and painting, by conversation that was any way interesting, even conversation overheard as it passed between strangers. As a fiction writer, I do have to deal with the nuts and bolts of temporal reality. From time to time, a character has to walk through a door and close it behind him. The creatures of imagination have to eat and sleep as all other creatures do. I would have been a poet if I could, to have avoided this obligation to simulate the hourliness and dailiness of human life. This is not to say that books could not be written about walking through a door. Away from what? Toward what? Leaving what wake of consequence? Creating what stir of displacement? To speak in the terms that are familiar to us all, there was a moment in which Jesus, as a man, a physical presence, left that supper at Emmaus. His leave-taking was a profound event for which the supper itself was precursor. Presence is a great mystery, and presence in absence, which Jesus promised and has epitomized, is, at a human scale, a great reality for all of us in the course of ordinary life. I am persuaded for the moment that this is, in fact, the basis of community. I would say for the moment that community, at least community larger than the immediate family, consists very largely of imaginative love for people we do not know or whom we know very slightly. This thesis may be influenced by the fact that I have spent literal years of my life lovingly absorbed in the thoughts and perceptions of, who knows it better than I? People who do not exist. And just as writers are engrossed in the making of them, readers are profoundly moved and also influenced by the non-existent, that great clan whose numbers increase prodigiously with every publishing season. I think fiction may be, whatever else, an exercise in the capacity for imaginative love or sympathy or identification. I love the writers of my 1,000 books. It pleases me to think how astonished old Homer, whoever he was, would be to find his epics on the shelf of such an unimaginable being as myself, in the middle of an unrumored continent. I love the large minority of the writers on my shelves who have struggled with words and thoughts and, by my lights, have lost the struggle. Altogether, they are my community, the creators of the very idea of books, poetry, and extended narratives, and of the amazing human conversation that has taken place across millennia through weal and woe over the heads of interest and utility.